Since Wilson ended up governing largely as a new nationalist, the subtler distinctions between his and Roosevelt's platforms did not matter very much for our purposes. America was going to get a progressive president no matter what in 1912, and while those of us with soft spots for Teddy might like to think things would have turned out very differently had he won, we are probably deluding ourselves. How it happened here. The prevailing assumption today is that the rise of fascism in Europe transpired on a completely independent track, that due to numerous national and cultural differences between America and Europe, it couldn't happen here. But this makes no sense whatsoever. Progressivism and later fascism were international movements and, in their origin, expressions of great hopes that assumed different forms in different countries but drew on the same intellectual wellsprings. Many of the ideas and thinkers the fascists and Nazis admired were as influential here as they were in Italy and Germany, and vice versa. For example, Henry George, the radical populist guru of American reform, was more revered in Europe than he was in America. His ideas gave shape to the Volkisch economic theories on which the Nazi Party was initially founded. Among British socialists, his progress in poverty was a sensation. When Marx's son-in-law came to America to proselytize for scientific socialism, he was so enamored of George that he returned to Europe preaching the gospel of American populism. From the 1890s to World War I, it was simply understood that progressives in America were fighting the same fight as the various socialist and new liberal movements of Europe. William Allen White, the famed Kansas progressive, declared in 1911, "We were parts, one of another, in the United States and Europe. Something was welding us into one social and economic whole with local political variations. It was Stubbs in Kansas, Jarrez in Paris, the Social Democrats, that is, the Socialists in Germany, the Socialists in Belgium, and I should say, the whole people in Holland, fighting a common cause." When Jane Addams seconded Teddy Roosevelt's nomination at the Progressive Party Convention in 1912, she declared, "The new party has become the American exponent of a worldwide movement toward juster social conditions, a movement which the United States, lagging behind other great nations, has been unaccountably slow to embody in political action." Ultimately, however, America was the sorcerer's apprentice to Europe's master. American writers and activists drank from European intellectual wells like men dying of thirst. "Nietzsche is in the air," declared a reviewer in the New York Times in 1910. "Whatever one reads of a speculative kind, one is sure to come across the name of Nietzsche sooner or later." Indeed, he went on, "much of the pragmatism of Professor William James bears auspicious resemblance to the doctrines of Nietzsche." Noticing that Roosevelt was always reading German books and borrowing from Nietzsche's philosophy, Mencken, a serious, if imperfect, Nietzsche scholar himself, concluded, "Theodore had swallowed Friedrich as a peasant swallows Peruna, bottle, cork, label, and testimonials." William James, America's preeminent philosopher, looked to the southern corners of the continent as well.